Take your Bibles, if you would, tonight, Malachi chapter 2. Malachi chapter 2. I thought it was neat that Andy used a verse from Malachi chapter 1 on Sunday night that we had studied the Wednesday night before. And the Lord must have knew that we needed a repetition of that particular truth, and so I was glad of that. But just remind you tonight as we get started that, again, the name Malachi means God's messenger. And that's what Malachi was. He was a messenger from God, delivering not his message, but God's message. He prophesied after the days of Nehemiah. And you remember Nehemiah was the one that came back and rebuilt the wall. That was after the temple had been rebuilt. And as they rebuilt the wall, they were able to rebuild the city because the wall gave them security from their enemies. And then I'd also remind you that this was going to be the last word from the Lord by way of prophecy for 400 years. The next thing that was going to happen was the New Testament and the events as described in the Gospels. And so this was God's last message to his people. And as we talked about last week, the temple had been rebuilt. The walls had been rebuilt. The city was being rebuilt. The prophets before Malachi had told that the Messiah was coming. And when the Messiah came, he was going to give final deliverance from all the enemies of God's people. And he was going to give real blessing. And so the leaders and the priest in Malachi's day said, you know, it won't be long. Messiah's coming. I mean, it's already been promised by God. So it doesn't really matter how we live our lives now. I mean, God is going to keep his promise. And so, as I mentioned last Wednesday night, and as Andy mentioned Sunday night, it was a period of time where the people were indifferent. The people were careless in their worship. They were hypocritical in their worship. They were just sort of going through the motions. And as we talked about last week, they were going through the motions as a duty. And it was talked about in chapter 1, a tiresome duty. I mean, they didn't do it for the joy that came out of worshiping the Lord. They did it because they had to. They were indifferent to the law. They were indifferent in their giving. We talked a little bit about last week. They offered sacrifices that did not meet the requirements that God gave them. God said, I want your best. I want sacrifices that have no blemishes in them. And they were offering God the leftovers. They were offering God the animals that were maimed and the animals that were blind. And one of the things that was happening that we're going to talk about tonight is that they were putting away or divorcing the wives of their youth, and they were marrying heathen women who worshiped idols that were turning their hearts away from God and making them indifferent to the things of God. And it's funny because I was reading Newsweek earlier in the week, and they were talking about how marriage is going out of style. That 60% of all marriages end in divorce. And how people are deciding that being married is no longer a good thing. And so they're avoiding it. And that's what was going on in Malachi's day. I mean, there was a high rate of divorce. The Bible doesn't quote any statistics as to how much. But there was a high rate of divorce. And Malachi comes on the scene. And again, he delivers God's message, not his message. And as we talked about last week, if you divide up the book, you can divide up the book into two parts. Malachi makes an appeal to the people, saying, now look, if God is really God, and he is, and if worshiping him is really important, and it is, let's do it the way he said to do it. Let's do it with our all. It's not, we don't just do it because of duty. Now, let me just stop and say, if the only reason you do it is because of duty, do it. Do it. Do it. Don't stop altogether. I mean, if you can't work up joy, if you can't work up excitement about serving the Lord, then serve him anyway. And pray the Lord gives you your joy and your excitement. But we ought to get to the point in our Christian life where we do it not as a duty. We ought to, like we were talking about last week, where we look forward to serving the Lord and we get joy out of serving the Lord and we get excited about serving the Lord. And so Malachi makes two appeals. And the first one is based on what was going on at that particular time. And God, as we talked about last week, makes an appeal to the priest. And then we're going to talk about the last part of that tonight. And then Malachi is going to make an appeal to the people. He's going to say, look at what you're doing. Just look at what you're doing. And come back to God. And then in chapters 3 and 4, he's going to make an appeal based on what was coming. The Messiah is coming. He really is coming, and his coming is soon. Again, it was going to be about 400 years, but it's his coming. And when he comes, he will punish the wicked, and he will bless the righteous. And he made an appeal to the people, because the Messiah is coming, let's live our life in a way that's pleasing to him. And I was thinking again this afternoon, you know, we can make an appeal to this message should appeal to us, because you know, God can make these same sort of statements to us today. There, like we mentioned last week, many Christians are just going through the motion. Many Christians are serving God, and it's a task, it's a job. They don't get joy out of it. And God can point to the sin that's going on today and say, look, if I'm really God, and he is, and if it's really important to serve me, and it is, then give it all your heart. Give it all you got. Because he is coming back soon. I mean, there may be less time between now and when the Messiah comes back for the second time, when Jesus returns to get us in that event we know as the rapture. There may be less time between now and when that happens than the 400 years between when Malachi prophesied and when Jesus came the first time. And again, I'm not setting any times, I'm not setting any dates. Nobody knows the times except the Father. But the same message and appeals that Malachi made to the people in that day are messages and appeals that can be made today. We live in a sinful world. We need to turn back to God. Jesus is coming back, and it may be soon. We need to live right and be ready for when he comes back. And so tonight we're going to pick up in chapter 2, verse 1. And again, this is still God appealing to the priest and warning them that they need to turn around. They need to get back to doing it right, get back to doing it the way he said for them to do. So chapter 2, verse 1. And now, O ye priest, this commandment is for you. And it wasn't a commandment like an instruction or an admonition. It was really a warning. He said, this word is for you. And we'll talk about the warning that he gives in verses 2 and 3. But I would remind you tonight that God commands both blessings and curses. God will bless the righteous, but he will also punish the wicked. And so he says to the priest, this is for you. What I'm about to say is for you. If ye will not hear, and if ye will not lay it to heart to give glory unto my name, saith the Lord of hosts, I will even send a curse upon you, and I will curse your blessings. Yea, I have cursed them already, because ye do not lay it to heart. And so, God, here's what God's saying to the priest. He said, now, this commandment, or this word, is for you. And this is going to be carried out if you don't listen, and if you don't take it to heart. You see, some people don't listen. They ignore the warnings that come from God, and they just don't pay any attention to them. Some people listen, but they don't take it to heart. They say, well, you know, the preacher must be talking to somebody else. Yeah, the guy sitting down in the pew for me can use that, but I don't need this. And so we don't take it to heart. And what God was saying, you need to do both. You need to listen, and you need to take it to heart. You know, I think the Bible, and every verse in it, and every lesson that is taught from it, and every sermon that's preached from it, has something for each individual. Now again, we make, and that's why when we come to church, we ought to come expecting to hear from God. I mean, we're coming to His house, we're sitting under His word, and every lesson and every sermon, we ought to listen with the expectation, okay, God, what do you have in this one for me? What do you have in it for me? I want to hear it, and I want to take it to heart. I don't believe God would bring us to this place just to waste our time. I don't believe He'd bring us to this place and not have something for us. I can always remember when all the kids left home and we all came back. It's sort of like Andy and Dan were arguing about Sunday afternoon as to who was the favorite. We always did that straight in my house too. Who was the favorite? And you know, and Grandma would always make a certain cake if I was the favorite, and she'd make a different cake if somebody else was the favorite. I want to tell you something. When you come to this place, you are God's favorite, and He has something specifically that He has prepared for you. I mean, every time, Sunday school, Sunday morning, Sunday night, even Wednesday night, He has something for you, and we need to hear it, and we need to take it to heart. And so He says in verse 2, you need to give glory unto my name, and if you don't, I'll send a curse upon you, and I will curse your blessings. I promised you blessings, but I'll change those blessings into curses if you don't get back to honoring my name. As they were just going through the motions, as they were taking everything for granted, they were not giving honor to the name of God. They were just saying, well, you know, what you said is not important. And what you said for us to do, we can take it or leave it. And God says, if you don't listen, if you don't take it to heart, if you don't get back to giving glory unto my name, He says, I'll turn your blessings into curses. In fact, He says at the end of the verse, He says, I have cursed them already because you do not lay it to heart. You've heard it, but you think it's for somebody else. You've heard it, but you haven't taken it in for yourself. He says you need to do both. Verse 3, behold, I will corrupt your seed and spread dung upon your faces, even the dung of your solemn feast, and one shall take you away with it. Now remember, the priest did not plant. And so the seed that's talking about in this verse is not God saying that I will corrupt your seed that you've planted in the ground. The priests were supported by the tithes of the people. They lived off the offerings that the people brought to God. You could take the word seed to mean a couple different things. One guy I studied after said, it represents their descendants, their children and grandchildren and those that will follow after them. Another guy said that it represents their strength and their ability to do what God wanted them to do. And He says, I'll corrupt that. I'll corrupt, I promise to be a blessing to the priest. And I'll read a verse in a minute that indicates that. But He says, if you don't get back to giving glory to my name, I'll corrupt your seed. I'll corrupt the strength of your arm. You will not be able to do what I want you to do. And then it talks about, He said, spread dung upon your faces. I mean, this was a real abominable thing to the priest, because the dung of the sacrifices that were offered on the altar was to be carried outside the camp and burned. Okay? And now God was saying, well, I'm going to take that dung, I'm going to spread it on your face, and it's going to corrupt you, and then one is going to take you away with it. In other words, you will no longer be qualified to serve me. You will no longer be qualified to offer the sacrifices. You'll be carried outside the camp with the dung, and you'll be separated from God, and you'll no longer be in the presence of God. And so it was a strong rebuke to the priest. Verse 4, and ye shall know that I have sent this commandment unto you, that my covenant might be with Levi, saith the Lord of hosts. In other words, what God was saying is, when you see this come to pass, when you see it happen, you will know that it comes from me. He said, I made a covenant with the tribe of Levi. I mean, I picked the tribe of Levi to minister at my altar. And when God picked the tribe of Levi, he expected them to be the example to all the people and the leaders of all the other people to respect and to follow the covenant. Now, again, a covenant is an agreement. And the covenant that God had in the Old Testament was that they were to come with blood sacrifices. And again, God describes several of them in the book of Exodus. And that's how they were to approach God, with those blood sacrifices. And what they were doing is they were corrupting that covenant. Now, the new covenant, or the New Testament that we have, is that we too come under the blood, but not of a sacrifice, but under the blood of Jesus Christ. And we'll talk about it in a minute. We corrupt that covenant when we say there's another way to heaven. Jesus is the only way to heaven. Always has been, always will be. Don't get to heaven without Christ. And so they were corrupting the covenant that God had given to the tribe of Levi. Verse 5, my covenant was with him of life and peace, and I gave them to him for the fear wherewith he feared me and was afraid before my name. In other words, I made this agreement with the priest, with the tribe of Levi, and it was a covenant of life and peace. And the word peace encompasses not only peace as we think of the word, but protection and health. In Numbers chapter 25, verse 12, God said to Phinehas, representing all the priests, behold, I give him my covenant of peace, and it shall be unto him and to his seed after him the covenant of an everlasting priesthood. And God's design when he picked the tribe of Levi were for them to be his priests, the ones that stood before the altar, the ones that led the people in the practice of worship they had, in this covenant of bringing the blood sacrifice. And when Moses, when he was about to go up on the mountain, take one look at the promised land and then die and be buried by God, when he was given his last address to the people of Israel, he gave some instructions to the Levites. He says, here's what you're supposed to do. Keep the covenant. Keep the covenant. Keep the agreement that God has made with us as to how we're supposed to approach him. Teach the law. Teach this book. Teach what God has said. Observe the sacrifices in a way that God told us to observe them. Bring the best without blemish. And be faithful in carrying out those duties. Because as you're faithful in carrying out those duties, you will bring up the blessing from God, not only on you, but on the people. And all that's in Deuteronomy chapter 33. Verse 8. And the Levi's response was, as that verse talks about, was to fear God. I gave them to him for the fear wherewith he feared me and was afraid before my name. Not being afraid, but having a deep abiding respect and awe for God. Holding God up and honoring him. Verse 6. The law of truth was in his mouth, and iniquity was not found in his lips. He walked with me in peace and equity and did turn many away from iniquity. What God's saying, you were like that at one time. At one time you did exactly what you were supposed to do. The law of truth was in your mouth. You spoke the truth that I had given you. You walked with me in peace. I mean, you kept the law, you taught the law, you walked with me in peace, and as you did that, you turned many people away from their iniquity. That was the priest's job. They were to be an example to the people. They were to lead them in the paths of righteousness by teaching the law and being an example of being and faithful. And when the priest did that, the people were blessed. The nation was blessed. They worshiped God, and God blessed them as a result of that. Verse 7, for the priest's lips should keep knowledge, and they should seek the law at his mouth. for he is the messenger of the Lord of hosts. The only way that the priest's lips can keep knowledge is that they stay in this book as they had it back then. The only way the law could be in their mouth is to study this book and to memorize this book. And Malachi reminds, or God is reminding the priest, you're my messenger. That's why the word of truth needs to be in your lips. That's why the law needs to be in your mouth. Because you are delivering my message. Now, again, same thing is true of us. We are God's messengers. He's left us on this earth to deliver a message. Say, well, preacher, isn't that your job? No, it's all our jobs. It's all our jobs. We have a message from God. The message is you can't get to heaven without Jesus Christ. The message is that this book works. I was talking to a guy today, he was one of Brother Leonard's relatives, and he had a rough life at the beginning. And he was telling me, he said, boy, since I got, you know, he said, I used to be the kind of guy that says, you know, this Christianity is for wimps and for sissies. And he said, I could never get saved because I'd have to give everything up that I like. And then he said, I got saved, and I figured out I didn't like that stuff anymore. And I figured out that the blessings from God were far outweigh the fun that I thought I was having in the world. And he made this statement to me, and it really made an impression. He says, I'll never go back. Wouldn't trade it if I could. I'll never go back. And we need to stay in this book because we are God's messengers. His truth needs to be in our lips. His law needs to be in our mouth. Verse 8, but ye are departed out of the way. Ye have caused many to stumble at the law. Ye have corrupted the covenant of Levi, saith the Lord of hosts. In other words, what God's saying to him, instead of doing what you were supposed to do, you've come out of the way. In other words, you've left my word. You've left my instructions. You've departed from the truth. You don't give importance to my will, okay? And then as a result of that, you have caused many to stumble. Instead of being the light and the guide that you're supposed to be to other people, you've become a stumbling block. And you have corrupted the covenant. The covenant, again, was how they were supposed to approach God. The covenant of the blood sacrifice, you've ignored it. You've disrespected it. You've disregarded it. I mean, and instead of being what you're supposed to be, you become the exact opposite. Instead of pointing people to me, you're pointing them away from me. Instead of being that light and guide, you become a stumbling block. And you know, I think the same thing's true today. When we turn away from the Bible, and when we pervert it to our liking, the same thing results. Instead of being a blessing, instead of being a guide, instead of being a light, we become a stumbling block. And many people have turned away from the covenant and say, oh, well, there is a different way to heaven. You can earn your way by being good. And they perverted the covenant. The covenant that we have today is what Jesus said in John chapter 14, verse 6. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh to the Father but by me. Take away this Bible, and what will end up, take away the Bible, or pervert it, change it to say what we want it to say, and as a result, sooner or later, as a result, we will pervert the covenant of God. And we will become a stumbling block to others. Verse 9, therefore have I also made you contemptible and base before all the people, according as ye have not kept my ways, but have been partial in the law. Priests were to be honored. The priests were to be given high esteem and respect. But because you have turned away from my ways, I've made you contemptible to the people. You're not going to get the respect that you should have. And he says there, you become partial in the law. You remember one of the things we talked about when we were studying some of the earlier prophets is that the priests and the leaders showed partiality. They showed favoritism as they applied the laws. Well, that's what they were doing. But you have become partial in the law. You picked out favorites. You put one person above another as you mete out justice, just like they did before the captivity. They'd gone back to the old sins. And therefore, God says, I've made you contemptible and base. Now, in verse 10 starts the second appeal in this first part, where Malachi starts talking to the people and makes his appeal, and he says, have we not all one Father? Hath not one God created us? Why do we deal treacherously every man against his brother by profaning the covenant of our fathers? And again, he's talking about the father of the covenant people, the father of the Jews. God created them. He picked them to be his people, his family. And what Malachi is saying is, we haven't been honest with each other. We haven't done right. We've dealt treacherously one with another because we have profaned the covenant. We're not approaching God like we're supposed to approach him. Take out God, and our relationship with each other falls apart. Take out God. Take out his principles and precepts that are in this book. Take out a right relationship with God, and you cannot have a right relationship with other men. Our relationship with each other is based on a relationship with God. In verse 11, God specifies how they had turned away from the covenant. Judah hath dealt treacherously, and an abomination is committed in Israel and in Jerusalem. For Judah hath profaned the holiness of the Lord, which he loved, and hath married the daughter of a strange god. So he's talking about Judah, the nation. He's talking about Israel, the sacred covenant name for his people. He's talking about Jerusalem, the center of worship. And he says, you have loved and have married the daughter of a strange god. You have married women that have worshiped idols. They have worshiped strange gods. Remember, God's people were forbidden to intermarry with other people. They were forbidden to intermarry with those that worshiped other gods. Solomon did it and brought idolatry into the nation of Israel. I mean, they were at the peak of their power under Solomon's reign. And when he started marrying women that worshipped other gods, they began to worship idols, and they turned Solomon away from it. And so God says, that's what you've done. In verse 12, the Lord will cut off the man that doeth this, the master and the scholar out of the tabernacles of Jacob, and him that offereth an offering unto the Lord of hosts. And those three terms, the master, the scholar, and him that offereth an offering unto the Lord of hosts, was sort of a proverb back then. And and when you wanted to include everybody, you said the master, the scholar, and him that offereth the offering to the Lord of hosts. And what God's saying is, everybody that's done that, everybody that's turned away from me, broken the covenant, married these women that worship strange gods, I will cut off everybody, no exception. I'll cut them off. And this have ye done again, covering the altar of the Lord with tears, with weeping and with crying out, insomuch that he regardeth not the offering any more, or receiveth it with good will at your hand. What Malachi is appealing to the people there is what he was saying is, not only have you married the daughters of these that worship strange gods, but you put away the wives of your youth. You put away the wives of your people, and they come to the altar and they weep because of the injustice that's done to them, and they weep so much that their tears put out the fire, where the sacrifices can't be offered, where God says, I won't receive it at your hand anymore. I won't receive it at your hand anymore. Verse 14, yet ye say, wherefore? Remember I told you how Malachi presents his book? He makes a statement and the people say, what do you mean? And then God comes back and says, well, this is what I mean. So God makes a statement. He says, look, I'm going to cut you off because you've married the daughters of these strange gods. You put away the wives of your youth. And yet you say, wherefore? Because the Lord hath been witness between thee and the wife of thy youth, against whom thou hast dealt treacherously, yet is she thy companion and the wife of thy covenant. God says, I was there when you got married the first time. I was a witness to the covenant or agreement you made with your wife. And now I'm a witness to you putting her away, breaking the covenant. The companion, the one that bore your children. Verse 15, and did not he make one? Yet had he the residue of the Spirit, and wherefore one? That he might seek a godly seed. Therefore, take heed to your spirit, and let none deal treacherously against the wife of his youth. What God's saying is this verse is, look, if you got anything left at all of my spirit, you won't do this. You won't do it. If how can you expect a godly seed? How can you expect a descendants? How can you expect them to be blessed? And he ends the verse by saying, if there's any of my spirit left within you, listen to it. Take heed. Don't do this. Verse 16, for the Lord, the God of Israel, saith that he hateth putting away. For one covereth violence with his garment, saith the Lord of hosts. Therefore, take heed to your spirit that ye deal not treacherously. Well, here's what God says. I hate it. This putting away of the wives of your youth and marrying these daughters of a strange God. I hate it. And you try to cover it up with your garments. Try to say, well, that's what everybody else is doing. Or say, you know, they made all sorts of excuses. And God says, I hate it. He says, if there's any of my spirit left within you, listen to it. Take heed. Don't do it. And then verse 17. Ye have wearied the Lord with your words. Yet ye say, wherein have we wearied him? When ye say, everyone that doeth evil is good in the sight of the Lord, and he delighteth them. Or, where is the God of judgment? And really, verse 17 is an introduction for the rest of the book. God says, you've wearied me. I've lost patience with you. Punishment is going to come. And they come back and say, well, how did we do that? How did we weary you? And God says, well, when you say that when you do evil, it's really good. When you know it's evil and you call it good and you say that God delights in it, where's the God of judgment? And again, I can't help but think of our own day. We figured out how to call evil good. We figured out how to call sin okay. And I can't help but think that God's getting weary of it. Where is the God of judgment? You know, there's all sorts of people saying, well, you know, God's a God of love. He's not a God of judgment. Well, yes, he is. God could not love as much as he loves without being a God of judgment. It's only when we realize that we've escaped the judgment of God is when we understand how much God really loved us and what he did for us when he sent Jesus to die for us. Judgment's coming, and it will come. And those people that are asking, where is the God of judgment? We'll see. We'll see. Thank you for being here tonight. Let's stand. We'll have a word of prayer. Be dismissed.